This is Robin with Tributaries, the power of your child's imagination. That sentence seems to stop short, but as the life's work and title to her book, to Dr. Charlotte Resnick, it is everything. Dr. Resnick is a nationally recognized child educational psychologist and associate clinical professor of psychology at UCLA, all while maintaining a private practice as well. As she states on page one in her book, what if your seven-year-old's heart could teach her to love herself? I'm ready to listen and to learn. I hope you are too. Stay tuned. This is Tributaries. Charlotte, thanks so much for joining us today.
Great. I'm so happy to be here.
So, okay, you've posed the question, what if your seven-year-old's heart could teach her how to love herself? What if and how does she do it?
Great point. It's the beginning of your child helping herself in almost every life challenge there is. The idea, my goal is to help kids have the inner skills, the inner tools to thrive in the world with all the stress, with almost 2010, everything going on in the world. Kids are affected, but right inside themselves, they have all this wisdom. And with just like a little help from us, they could get there.
I like the personal wizard concept as well. And I know I'm diving right into your valid points that you bring up as this process that you do. And could you either share either the personal wizard or how does that heart work? How do you connect the child to their heart?
I think I'd like to go back to that heart question.
Okay.
Because it's one of the tools I've kind of put together, but it's a central tool. And the idea is that our heart does have wisdom. In fact, the Heart Math Institute has done a lot of research showing that it has wisdom. When you think about this, people that have heart transplants, there is a lot of evidence through what they tell, they share with their doctors, that something happens when you get the heart of another. There's information that's passed on. Because there are a lot of times where people like start craving the ice cream that their heart donor had or liking something they didn't like before. So there's definitely information in the heart. And what I do with kids, even young ones, even as young as 3 or 4, all the way up through college age, and of course these are skills for life, but this is the population I usually work with, have them connect to what their heart wants to tell them. I have them even check in each day. All you have to do is, focus on your breathing. I call it the balloon breath, basically breathing below your belly button 2 or 3 inches. And it's a basic meditation kind of breath. And that will calm and center you so you can start checking in with yourself. And I'll have the kids even put their hand over, say, their heart center, about the middle of their chest, where their heart, is on that level, and ask, what's the message for today? What do you want to tell me? And the hearts speak up, and maybe initially it's kind of a weird thing for kids. They're not used to checking in with their heart, but they just wait patiently or they check in again, and all of a sudden a message pops up. It pops up like a thought in your mind, but because you're connecting to your heart, like one girl, her heart, this girl I was thinking about when I wrote that at the beginning, her heart told her to love herself no matter what and gave her a gift. I think the gift actually was from her wizard. She had a wizard, and the wizard gave her the gift of several different little crystals. One was a heart crystal, one was a star crystal, and the star was to remember that she's a star, even if her friends were ignoring her. And the heart crystal was to remember to love herself and her friends, even when they were in a bad mood. So she's getting information from her own inner wisdom that serves her almost better than if her mom told her these things.
Oh, of course, yes.
It goes in much, much, much faster.
Especially when they're 15, right?
Or teacher or I said any of this. The idea is that the kids do have those answers. They just have to check in with themselves. And coming from themselves is so much more powerful.
Yes, and I love how you just put, normally I would have said or thought common sense, but you said common-centered, and I like that.
Yes.
It means the same thing as far as I can tell, and yet it's a whole different way of looking at it.
Yes, yes. Because when we're centered, that's when we could respond to a crisis or a problem rather than react to it. That's when
sure.
we can connect.
Yeah.
That's when we could trust ourselves. Like, I'll tell kids all the time, when you center yourself, that's listen to that. So you'll know the answer after you center yourself.
Right. And just by being in the center of something, really, it also kind of illuminates this whole protective sphere around us. I like it.
Yes. I have a little imagery that I'll do with the kids of protection. And maybe we'll start with a kernel of love in their heart. Maybe it's gold, maybe it's white, whatever color they think of as love. And I'll have them breathe that with their intention and their breath. Breathe that love throughout their whole body and see how far they could get. And if they could fill their whole body up with love, then send it out, their physical body, 6 inches, a foot, up to even 3 feet. And then put a protective coating, kind of a shell around them so that only good could come in.
Right. Now, I don't know what your situation is like with your clinic at the college and or your private practice. Is there an age or a financial level or demographic where, you know, you might have the child and they'll sort of look at you sideways like, yeah, right.
Right. Well, depending on the age of the child, you want to change the language.
Okay.
So the basic ideas are the same, but whoever I'm working with and whoever a parent or a therapist or an educator is working with, they know those kids. So, for instance, if a teenager comes in and his mom is complaining about he's fighting with his siblings, but he just wants to date girls or do better in sports, I will start with what's important to him. So soccer's really important. Okay, so then I'll pull in and I'll share with him there's so much research in sports using the power of your imagination.
Sure.
Every college team, every Olympic athlete uses visualization to do better. And so if he could see that, gosh, he could do better in basketball or soccer using his imagination, then we could go over, hey, you know, your younger sister's really bugging you. Would you like things to be better? So I already pulled him in with something that's important to him.
Right. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Then he'd be more open to try something else. Just like when I don't say you're treating your younger sister badly, I kind of go from his point of view. So when you're working with a child any age, whether he's 3 or 18 or, 7, it doesn't matter. You want to start with where they are at.
Right. I know there's...
Bring them along.
I was reading somewhere recently, and I'm sorry, I can't pull up right now where it was I was reading, but it just flat out said a child can't do anything wrong. You know, it's like as adults, I think if we could all come from that vantage point, even when, a child does something for the umpteenth time and you finally lose your patience over it, we have to do our best not to make any of ourselves outside of ourselves be in the wrong. You know, there are different ways to do that.
Yes, exactly. And that's why I have, tools for parents, too, that just calm themselves down so they could take a step back.
Right, yeah.
And see the situation. If you could, because as a parent, you're so connected emotionally. And if you could somehow take a little bit of a step back and just look at it a little more objectively and see yourself almost as your child's life coach, where you're trying to help them develop the skills to be to do well in life. Sometimes that takes a little bit of the emotion out.
Is there a point where you find parents losing patience the most when getting started trying to incorporate this into their and their children's lives?
I think a lot of parents, as everyone, patience is, we say patience is a virtue, and the reward of patience is more patience, because when you're starting out, I really try to suggest that parents just do things slowly if possible, just kind of bring it in nonchalantly, really calmly, unless they're in an absolute crisis situation, but kind of just start playing with imagination games, asking them, gosh, what's it going to be like when, you know, you reach your goal? What's it going to be like when you could sleep through the night really well? And so just start putting it out there slowly. And a lot of times when people read The Power of Your Child's Imagination, they get all excited because there's all these ideas and exercises, and they just want to do everything at once. And learning doesn't always work like that. So you want to bring it in slowly.
Right. For instance, how long did it take you to write the book?
How long did it take me to write the book? Forever.
Okay. There you go, everyone. Be patient.
I had the desire once I started working with kids in this realm over 20 years ago, 25 years ago, and it reminded me when you asked about demographics, what it works with, you know, does it work with a different demographic? Well, I started in the inner city of Los Angeles because I was desperate. The kids were, it was a dark place, they were having a hard time, they had unbelievable stresses, they didn't have this parent support, and so I felt I needed something to touch their soul, to touch their heart.
Mm.
And so I wanted to teach them the skills that could help them, no matter where they were, that they'd be okay. And then when I transferred over to more of a private practice and middle-class kids or, you know, even higher than that, I saw that the kids are the same. We all have hearts. We all have the same needs and desires for love and fitting in and belonging and doing well. So it really transferred very, very well.
Now, as a professor, associate professor at UCLA, this is quite a research and clinical hub, of course. And I'm wondering, what are you seeing as a result of today's state of affairs for kids that is perhaps historically different?
Well, what I'm seeing is that there's a lot more information out there. So there's a lot more that kids have to learn, and that leads to a lot more stress. Everything's kind of ramped up another level. It's kind of, every generation has to do things a little bit differently, so they're more extreme. So kids feel under more pressure to do different things. It's a little more outrageous. It's kind of like when 30 years ago, kids were not routinely piercing their body and getting tattoos, and now it's quite common. So it's just taking things to another level, and I think it could be confusing for kids. And even in school, there's so much more information to learn. And I see kids doing from 3 to 6 hours of homework a night just to keep up.
Right. I know. That should go right out the window, in my opinion.
And my work at UCLA, I'm an associate clinical professor, so I'm not there all the time. What they do with their clinical faculty is they invite people who are in the clinical field to come in and supervise graduate students, you know, from time to time.
So right. Oh, that's
very
great.
Very nice.
Yes.
That gives their graduate students a taste of the real world, so to speak.
Right. And that's fabulous to hear, because one of the questions I had written out was about all of the research and data being one thing, and children, and all people for that matter, are another. And what does the experienced therapist know that the novice doesn't?
Well, the research, you know, in this area is, of course, with real people, so that definitely helps. And there's a lot of amazing research in using the power of children's imagination to help heal themselves.
Right, but I'm sorry to interrupt, but that's true, but if you're doing a research project, then you're sticking to the modus operandi. And then when it's your turn to go out and, okay, here's this beautiful, fresh, new being in front of you, and you don't have the note of where to start, and you don't have the note where to finish, and you need to just settle in and make that connection. And I think that's obviously the difference between a good therapist and a bad one. But
and it takes time. Sometimes it's like just innate. You know, they're a born therapist. And other times it takes time from experience. You learn from working with children. I always play a game in the elevator or wherever I am. I guess the child's age, because I've seen so many children, I'm pretty right on.
Sure.
So it's kind of fun. Or I've done a lot of assessment of children over the years, and because of that, very quickly I could kind of get a feeling for what's going on with the child. But a new person doesn't have that experience, so they have to do all the testing and, and all those steps. And that's just the way the world works. It just takes a little time.
Right.
I'm hoping that when people actually read The Power of Your Imagination, there's enough simple directions and stories that will inspire people to use their own creativity.
Right, and go inside and take the lead from there.
Yeah.
Right.
Because that's what's so wonderful. You don't know what's going to happen in the moment. When you're working back and forth with a child, with your own child, you don't know what's going to come from the imagination. It's a surprise. So you just want to have the tools to help you go back and forth. Like, sometimes you're surprised. I think I'm leading children on a nice journey when I started working in groups in the inner city, and their drawings afterwards were all bloody and scary and horrible. And it was like, well, what's happening here? Well, what was happening is that they were relaxing and the defenses were coming down, so that all their worries and their problems were coming up. So that was a good thing, because it was starting to release it, and then we could work with it.
Yes. I know at one time a red flag was raised if a child had an imaginary friend, and I'm wondering, where's that today? Are there red flags flying or green ones?
Well, I guess it was in the old days when you were worried about that. Did they really believe somebody was there? And I don't know, maybe somebody is there, but that's okay. You know, whatever they feel. I think it doesn't really matter whether it's in their imagination, whether it's some spirit visiting them. Who knows? You know, we don't have real hard scientific data on that yet. However, if you're using your imagination for good, that's a lovely thing. And a lot of kids develop imaginary friends because they get lonely. They want someone to play with anyway. So I say, okay, great. Let's use that. Let's see if that imaginary friend, and I encourage them to have animal friends and wizards, you know, whatever comes to them. Sometimes grandma comes to them and she's already passed on, and kids imagine what grandma advises them. And that's fine because it gives them a point of reference. It helps them in their life.
Right. Now,
I'm not concerned that they're turning into, you know, psychotic and they don't know reality.
Right. No, I knew you weren't just by the fact that you wrote the book, but I was wondering, you know, hopefully it's a good trend that's floating through now. As you mentioned in your book, and as we all know, technology has disturbed our sense of natural time. But I have to question whether just the fact that everything from food to communication is speeding up at such a rate, doesn't that become the new natural time? Isn't that the three-year-old's world? You know, I always felt like even though all of my three children are with the same man, each one had a different set of parents just
yes.
because of the time and experience that
yes.
had passed.
That's why they talk about the generation gap, because each generation is so different. And yet we're still all human. So I feel when time is speeding up so much, that's why it's so important to take a little time to go back inside yourself to balance,
mm-hmm.
no matter how fast things are becoming. And I do think that when kids are exposed to computer and TV and very fast things early on, well, that brain is developing, you know, till age five very, very quickly. So they're being hardwired differently. So the kids are different.
Right, exactly my point. So it's not necessary, you know, as old timers, so to speak, we could be hung up on something. And it's really just the paradigm that we are in and we grew up in. And I think lots of times we don't allow for, or it is not allowed for this new generation to be where they're at.
Right.
And then they're trying... And then
you know, if the new generation is working, if that speeding is working for them, great. More power to them. The problems come up when it's not working for them, when they get off balance.
Yes.
And we do need time to go back inside of ourselves. We need that balance.
Right. And, of course, I think, of course, that it's that going inside that will allow for whatever change goes on in this world.
Yes. Yes. I'll give out little sticker dots, and I'll have the kids put it somewhere that's a little stressful, and I'll just have them take three balloon breaths just to calm themselves down, just to recenter at any time whenever they notice it, and then maybe work up to a minute, and then maybe work up to 2 minutes, because kids aren't going to sit for 20 minutes, but I could get them, everyone can find a minute, even
right.
a busy mom.
Yes.
So if I can get a minute or 2 minutes, I'm happy.
Exactly, yeah.
And they tell me, I'll even start with, let's do 3 breaths with your eyes open and then 3 with your eyes closed. And I'll ask the kids, what's the difference for them? And most of them tell me it's more relaxing with their eyes closed because they're shutting out that external stimuli.
Mm-hmm. Right. What is the most astounding interaction you've had with a child? What can you pull up for us?
Astounding, the most astounding interaction? Oh, my gosh. I'm scanning through all these years. every day I'm astounded. I'm always amazed. This is a very sweet little story. One girl was having trouble with her siblings, and I asked her where she keeps different feelings in her body, and she had a Red Bull in her knee, and her Red Bull was protecting her from the bull and other people because she was like a bully, you know, and very mean. And she felt that that bull needed to be there to protect her. And so I asked her, well, what could help? And she imagined this white filter in her neck that would filter out the anger that was coming out. And she'd still say the words, but they wouldn't be so mean. And then she discovered some love potion in her heart. And when she dripped it on the Red Bull, it put him to sleep and turned him into this cute little creature. And she sort of kept, you know, the Red Bull around, but didn't come out so often. And what astounded me about that, it was so creative. Like, who would have thought that? You know, you just wouldn't come to that idea from a logical perspective.
Right. I'm seeing a great book from that. It's a great story, as you said.
A little children's story about the Red Bull.
Exactly, yeah. Do you see a certain age, and I want to say on average and normal are two words I actually hate, so I don't know why I'm asking this question, but is it more difficult to introduce these tools after a certain stage? I mean, I'm sort of sensing now, no.
No, right, exactly, because when I do workshops, I'm talking to adults, so I'm teaching the tools to an adult. It's the same. It's only the language that changes. I was surprised because I thought maybe 5 would be a good time to start, but I had a 3-year-old, and he checked in with his heart and belly, and his belly told him to share with the kids at preschool. Now, again, that goes back to, gosh, he must have heard that from his mom or his teacher, but it didn't mean anything. But coming from himself, it made an impact.
Sure.
And so then it depends. You know, teenagers might not be into wizards, depends how much they're still into Harry Potter, but they could have a wise person. They could get in touch with their older self, the one who's already accomplished the problem, reach that goal.
Sure, and I rather quite like that. I mean, I was in the bookstore with my 7-year-old granddaughter the other day, and everything is wizard this and wizard that, and I'm really over all of that.
You're over
fantasy, yeah. And believe me, I believe in a lot more than what any wizard I've seen can do. You know what I mean?
So. Right. So you just use whatever is important. I mean, I separate the animal friends from the wizards because I see animal friends as loving protectors, and they could help you solve problems in a different way, whereas wizards is the idea of a master teacher in human form.
And manifester, yes.
Right. And so that could be, you know, could be many things.
Sure.
One girl had Albert Einstein as her wizard. Another had a spelling wizard, because you could have an all-purpose wizard or specific one. So one boy who was having trouble with spelling and getting like 27 words wrong in a paragraph called in a spelling wizard who helped clean his brain and whisper the answers, and his errors went down to 3 or 4 after several, you know, a few months.
Somewhere I want to go with this right now is, you know, creating, you know, the difference between a pagan who has a god for lightning, a god for thunder, a god for earth, for harvest, for everything. And then there's the one god mindset of it all is, basically. And I'm wondering, you know, do you ever see or get that you can just go inside and have that being, that isness that is just not segregated out into different parts? And
Sure. That part, you know, I, in terms of any spirituality, I sort of go where the child is at, because this work could be on a very cognitive level. So depending on what kind of family I'm working with or what situation I'm in, I'll help teach these tools in different ways.
Right.
So one girl, we went out to outer space, you know, just for a journey. The idea of is to go to a planet that's like Earth, but more more perfect in a way, and to bring back gifts, to bring back to Earth, to bring back to her life. And when she said when she was going out into space, she saw God. So that was her belief, so then we could work with that. So I go whatever the kids believe in, and then just work from there.
Yeah. How is it different proposing visualization techniques to children rather than adults? Or is there?
It's in the language. It's just, you know, whatever age I'm speaking to, I just talk to them. And the idea that they have information inside them and we're just going to access it. Like when I speak to teenagers, I'll say, look, I don't have your answers, but I'll help you find your answers. I know what's inside. As much as there is outside in the world, there's that much and more inside.
Sure.
So it's like helping them find a portal into their own inner wisdom and to trust that.
Right. The subtitle to your book, How to Transform Stress and Anxiety into Joy and Success, this book really is about breakthroughs for learning, creativity, and empowerment. And I believe that's sort of how you verbalize what it is you do with parents and children, et cetera. And I love the empowerment aspect of this, obviously. And I know these techniques get used to lower insulin dose, to lower the asthma drugs for children. And I love kids, and I just feel like this needs to be part and parcel with anesthesia, with post-op appointments, and even with school detentions. And can this happen?
Bit by bit, yes, please. Just share it with the world, Robin, and it can happen.
Like, please tell me.
One of my CDs, Creating a Magical Garden and Healing Pond, I sort of developed the concept when I was having a group and everyone had something else wrong with them that day. You know, one had a stomach ache, one had a headache, and someone had a canker sore. So these ideas are around in the world. There's really nothing new created. It's just how you put it together.
Sure.
So the idea of a magical garden is the metaphor for a healthy body. So you grow a healthy body. And then the healing pond, you could lie in it and the waters wash away inside and you could drink some healing tea. Well, when we did this in the group, when everyone kind of opened their eyes, the headache was gone, the stomach ache was gone, the canker sore didn't hurt. One of the boys with the canker sore came back the next week and said, it went away in half the time. Just wonderful. And there's so much research in this area. There was a study at Duke, and they use this for kids with chronic stomach pains. They used different imageries, and one of them was kind of holding a magic stone that kind of melted in their hands and warmed their hands up. And then they had the kids put their hands on their bellies, and the heat would melt away their pain. And that was very effective. They found that kids that listened to those CDs, they were 3 times more likely to get rid of their stomach pain.
Right.
And then that CD that I did was used in a pilot study at a children's hospital where kids who were teenagers who had spinal surgery found that they had less pain and more relaxation just listening compared to the group that didn't. Very, very powerful. That's my mission, Robin, is to get this out in everyday use so that every child could have the tools.
Who is a mentor of yours?
Oh, gosh. I love Marielle Fuller, who's no longer with us. She was at UCLA, and I studied with her for a year and a half every week.
We've been speaking with Dr. Charlotte Resnick, author of The Power of Your Child's Own Imagination. For any guest information, to listen to archives, share resources, and sign up for weekly programming, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. And for podcasting, iTunes, Tributaries Radio. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.